Welcome to St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations, a podcast featuring members of the St. Mark's Cathedral community in Seattle, Washington. These interviews feature lives of faith and adventure, service and connection. Here's our host, Michael Pereira.
If there's an unofficial list of the people who have seen everything and done everything at St. Mark's, I'm pretty sure Walter Studeville's name is very high up on that list. Walter, to the best of my knowledge, has served in literally every ministry at St. Mark's, and he's probably been here since the time of St. Mark himself. We'll establish that later. But we did want to sit down with Walter to have a conversation with him to find out who he is, where he comes from, and why this is a place for which he keeps giving himself. And so, with no further ado, Walter Studeville, thank you for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here.
So just to start off, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us where you come from, if you're not from the Seattle area originally. Tell us how you found St. Mark's and the Episcopal Church.
I was born in Bremerton across the sea in 1943. But we moved from there to Wenatchee when I was about 8. And so my teenage years were spent being raised in Central Washington. And then I came to the University of Washington in 1963 and graduated from the UW, and then was in the Army for 2 years, and then came back and went to law school at the university, and have been in Seattle ever since, working in several different capacities, as a lawyer, as a mediator, as a hearing officer and examiner, working both for 10 years for a labor union and then for 25 years for the state of Washington. I first became aware of St. Mark's actually when I was fairly young, because my paternal grandmother lived over on 16th Avenue East, just across the hill from St. Mark's. And I wandered around one day and happened to see this very large building. I'm not sure I noticed the cross at the top of the building, so I wasn't quite sure what it was, which has been one of the dilemmas of St. Mark's up until recently. And then actually I wandered into the space during a Thanksgiving service there, when Dean Loeffler was the dean of the cathedral. And, I had been raised in the, Christian church, the Disciples of Christ. And so going into a church wasn't a particularly odd thing for me to do or challenging thing for me to do. It was a familiar thing. And, I was certainly, as a young kid, impressed with the ritual, which was different from my church, and the vestments, which was very different different from my church. I became more acquainted with the church through the avenue that many, many people have, and that's the Compline service. When I was going to the University of Washington, some friends and I would come up here and go to Compline on a fairly regular basis. I was going to church at the time in the university district, but I didn't find the church that I was going to particularly friendly. And so I decided to come up to St. Mark's and see what that was like. And one of the first people I met at St. Mark's was a gentleman by the name of Ib Nielsen. And Ib was one of those people, he was the Earl Grout of the early days of when I was involved. And he knew everybody. He was very friendly, very helpful, just a super nice guy. And he was my first introduction, really. And so I'd walk into St. Mark's, I was immediately greeted by Ib and others, of course. And so I think a lot of my getting sort of glued into the place was because my basic introduction was so open and accepting. And then, to be honest, I stuck around.
Do you remember when that introduction was?
Well, I was confirmed by Bishop Ira Ivol Curtis in 1970. So that introduction was probably in 1969, 68, while I was going to law school.
So this has been about 50 years for you.
Yes, just about.
Okay. And I didn't want to age you there, but...
No, I age myself. I told you when I was born, so true. You can figure that out easily enough.
So this might be something of a loaded question, but how much has St. Mark's changed in those 50 years?
Oh, tremendously. You don't have enough time. When I started, it was a relatively small congregation. It had a big presence in the community for lots of different reasons, not the least of which was Dean John Loeffler was involved in a TV panel discussion on a weekly basis, as I remember it, with a Lutheran pastor and the priest down at St. Patrick's, Father Tracy, and I have no idea why I remember his name, but I do. And so he was John was well known in the city, but it was clearly the place where the city gathered for big events involving the church. And so it was well known for that, but the congregation was relatively small, and the music program was very good. Peter Halleck was there. Compline obviously was a big attraction, but there were programs, but not the multitude of programs that we have now, certainly. And it took me a long time before I got really involved with the church. I was sort of on the periphery because I was in law school at first, and then I was starting a new job. And the jobs I had subsequent to that all required travel. And so I wasn't as involved in the early days as I am now. But certainly the church was an activist church in many ways. I was there when Cabby Tennis on a Christmas Eve service preached against the bombing in Southeast Asia. And so St. Mark's was known for its civic activism for a long, long time. I think it was partly Cabby Tennis who helped cement me into this place, because I found his sermons to be intellectually challenging, intellectually and emotionally challenging, and really probably grounded me more in our theology than I had previously been grounded in any kind of theology. And that was, I think that was something that the church, the St. Mark's, has built on since then, in terms of the quality of the preaching and the quality of the theology that's expressed from the pulpit. And I think that's an enormous change. A couple of years ago, I went back. We have a book here on the sermons of John Loeffler, and I read some of his sermons, and I was actually disappointed. At the time, I thought his sermons were great, and I realized that they, to my mind, don't stand up to what we're hearing these days. They aren't as challenging. They aren't as thought-provoking. They're just very different. So I think it is a very different place physically, but in many other ways in addition to that, and perhaps more important, theologically.
You said it took a while for you to really start plugging into St. Mark's. Do you remember what you first started doing when you began to get more involved, when your time allowed?
Oh, yeah, very distinctly. It was just immediately prior to a Holy Week, and I can't tell you what year it was. But there was a notice in the bulletin, which wasn't called Sundays and Beyond at that point, that if people were interested in joining a small group with the Altar Guild to work at preparation for Holy Week. And this intrigued me, and I did that, and that's how I met Sue Tate, who's the sacristan to this day and was the sacristan then, and Donna Barnes, who was then the head of the Altar Guild, and various other people. And we started meeting on a weekly basis to talk about Holy Week and particularly the liturgy. And, you know, I had observed the liturgy, but I hadn't been involved in Episcopal liturgy at all. And so that was an introduction, and I've been involved in the Altar Guild ever since. I mean, that it showed me the value of being involved in a small group early, rather than trying to take on the whole place, because even though it was a growing congregation, but it was still relatively small, but still that's a good sized group of people. But with a much smaller group of people like the Altar Guild, you get to know one another, you get comfortable, you get introduced to the priests. I certainly knew the priests better when I was on the Altar Guild than I did prior to that. Although the priests were very accessible, it wasn't a matter of accessibility, it was just a matter of encounters more than anything else. So it was that introduction to the Altar Guild, and that group continued, by the way, and we worked on the liturgies, particularly for Holy Week, for probably 4 or 5 years, I think, after that. But that got me into the Altar Guild, and then that led to me being a chalice bearer, and then that led to me to be involved in other things. So, you know, it was a gradual kind of a step-by-step progression.
And this leads us to a tricky question to ask, which is, you said it led you to other things. Tell us about the other things that you've done here.
Well, one of the things that led me, and again, I can't remember the exact years because that's not the way my brain happens to function. When I was asked to run for the vestry, and I did, and was not elected for several reasons. Probably the primary one was, in those days we met in the nave, prior to the voting. The annual meeting was in the nave, and each one of the candidates would speak. Well, I had come down with the flu that day.
No.
And I really toyed with the idea of not showing up at all because I felt so bad. But I finally decided, and I really didn't know who to call to say I can't be there. You know, I wasn't probably thinking very straight either because I was too sick. So I tried to show up. I did show up, but I tried to talk and it wasn't very successful. But I also realized afterwards that I didn't think I was particularly ready for that. And that, a lot of people didn't know me. People in the Altar Guild knew me, but a lot of other people didn't know me. And so that didn't necessarily mean I changed what I was doing or I embarked on any kind of a campaign or anything, because I didn't. But it was a realization that it wasn't because I didn't take it personally because I wasn't appreciated. It was simply because people that got elected were better known, and that was a simple fact of life. Hmm. But I was asked again to run. This is sort of the little engine that could or something, I suppose. And this time I was better known.
No flu.
No, I wasn't sick. I can't remember if we had to give statements like that, although since that time I've done lots of public speaking and that's no big deal. But I didn't get elected, but to be totally honest with you, and I don't know how much you want to go into this, that was just before the dean and the vestry got into a major conflict. And in some ways, I felt very blessed that I wasn't on the vestry.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because it was very difficult. On the other hand, I often wondered, well, could I have contributed something? And I actually did. That actually got me more involved now that I'm thinking about it and putting the pieces together, because I remember talking to vestry members about what was going on, not in terms of asking questions, as some of it wasn't my business. It was personnel issues. It was their prerogatives. But in terms of encouraging the ones that I felt were really bright and on top of things, but also were getting heavily criticized. Bob Muglia is the major one I'm thinking of, is letting him know that I supported him and the others, some of the others that were on the vestry at the time, because I knew it was very difficult. And then for a while, 15 or 20 of us started attending vestry meetings because we were really concerned about what was going on. And I think that started getting me more involved in the governance part of it, not just from the outside, but actually watching how the vestry was working and getting to know the people that were on the vestry and everything else. Well, the upshot of all of this is the next time I was asked to run for the vestry, I was elected. The joyful part of that was I was running alongside one of my very good friends, Hunter Tynes. And if Hunter was elected, I would have been most pleased. If I was elected and Hunter was not elected, I would not have been pleased. We tied and we were both elected. And, that comforts me a great deal remembering that, because that was the best of all possible results. And I don't know how the Holy Spirit managed to do that, but
when the time was right.
The time was right, and the time was right for both of us. Mm. And Hunter was having some physical difficulties at the time. And so he and I used to go pick him up. He just lived over on Pill Hill, and I used to go pick him up and take him to the vestry meetings and then take him home. And we'd sit in my car after the vestry meetings and chatter for an hour, which for a new vestry member was really helpful, because Hunter had an even longer history at St. Mark's, particularly in the governance, than I did. And so I learned an enormous amount, but I also, it deepened our friendship even more than it had been before, and it had been pretty deep before. So my introduction to the vestry was sort of through Hunter, and was quite wonderful. That was another thing that really got me involved in a wider scope than just the altar guild liturgy focus.
And that directs me to the question I really wanted to ask. And my question is, why? Why is this a place that gets that kind of a response from you?
Throughout my answer, I'm aware that I'm mentioning names, and I'm doing that deliberately because that's why. It's the people. It's the relationships. It's the support, and it's the giving of support. It's the community. And I've never thought of coming to St. Mark's and doing whatever I do as a task, as an obligation, as a job. I've always thought of it as being a part of the community. And that's partly how I was raised, because in my family, we all had quote-unquote jobs, I guess you would call them. As children, I did. And then as a young high school kid, my father had a retail business, and I worked for him, as did my brother. So we were, as a family, always involved with one another in terms of working together. And so I think I have just transferred that to this community. But it's because there are lots of people who are intellectually stimulating, bright, human, wonderful people to work with and to get to know. And I've grown very conscious of how important that is to me. So that's what has really sustained me, I suppose, and made this an unconscious part of my life. I just do it. I'm not logging hours. To me, it's important. Whether I'm over in the nave by myself vesting the altar, or that I joked earlier that I've actually swept floors. Well, I was doing that before we laid down the labyrinth. So on New Year's Eve day, it's not unusual to find me in the nave sweeping the floor because the pews have gone out. And then laying down the canvas labyrinth that we have. So I find it fulfilling, and both emotionally and spiritually, because there's a spiritual component to all of that. You can have great relationships in a lot of secular organizations, but there's a spiritual component to it that I treasure and really find very, very important for my life.
How has your time at St. Mark's and your work here, how has that changed you?
Oh, I feel like I should be on a couch answering these questions. Yes, doctor. I think it has made me, well, let me try it from this tack. I was educated as a lawyer, which is very logical, step by step. You analyze a situation, you bring in evidence, you work the evidence against the law, and you come to a conclusion. That's what I was doing when I was writing legal decisions. And so that was my education, and that was much of my professional life. So what St. Mark's and this parish community have done have helped me reach a different part of my being, that is my emotional and spiritual life, and to see how those can be interwoven and connected and deepened who I am and what I do, so that it's not just sort of going, when I was writing decisions, you're just kind of going through the process. I mean, there's no way necessarily emotional involvement. In fact, if there is, you need to be conscious of that to disregard it, because you're trying to make a decision based on facts and statutes principles of the organization. So what this place helped move me to is a different way of viewing the world and a different way of viewing myself and my interactions into the world. And so I think that's been a key change as a result of this.
That's huge.
Yep.
To go from
very much
that analytical world to something that's a lot more subjective, emotional ones.
The interesting thing is, I mentioned earlier that Cabby Tennis's sermons really affected me. Cabby is a lawyer. So Cabby's sermons were very much in tune with my intellectual propensities at that point in time. Since then, we have had other priests who have preached, in simplistic terms, I suppose, more from the heart than the brain. And that has helped move me into a very different place. And Redding was certainly one of those people. Steve Thomason does that. Nancy Martin does that. Well, I think Jennifer and Nancy Ross both do that. So it's, while still maintaining a strong intellectual basis for that, but moving beyond that into our spiritual life together. And I think that's what's really happened to me in this process of living in the life of this parish.
You've talked a lot, well, I've asked you, and you've talked a lot about the things you've seen here at St. Mark's over the last 50 years. Where do you see this place going in the next 50 years?
I believe that it is very successful right now, and I think the successful conclusion of the capital campaign is obviously evidence of that. I was involved in the capital campaign, the Living Stones Project, from its inception, literally from its inception, because it really started with Steve working with the facilities committee, looking at priorities, and then moving into the fact that repairing the walls and the windows was a major priority. But I saw so much energy. I mean, there were meetings where there were 40 or 50 people, each assigned to different tasks, working together with a sense of joy and accomplishment and camaraderie. So if we can maintain that, and obviously we're not going to do another capital campaign like that in the probably near future, but if we can maintain that sense of who we are and that we're so much stronger as a community than we are as individuals, then I have every reason to think this place is going to continue to be successful. I also think our theology is moving with the times, is interested in becoming and maintaining relevance in the world as it is, not in the world as we want it to be, and not in the world as it used to be, but as in the world as it is. That takes a lot of work, because knowing what that world is and being able to respond to it in appropriate ways is the work for a lot of the committees and the vestry and the clergy. And but I think with the talent we have here and the people who are clearly energized to do their part, however small or however large it is, I think we'll move forward very successfully and continue to thrive. And I think we're thriving now, and I have no reason to suspect. I mean, there's going to be ups and downs. There is in any community, and God knows we've had them in the past. But I think we are well situated and well grounded to move forward in a positive way.
As we wrap up here, we talked about the future, but our final question is going to be one more look at the past. If there was any specific event or a series of events, whether it happened yesterday or your first day here, that left an impression on you and that continues to inform and influence what you think of when you think of St. Mark's?
Well, I think there were two. One that I just mentioned is the capital campaign, mm-hmm. which I contrast what we did with Living Stones, because I had not been a part of, but had observed earlier deans attempting to start capital campaigns and not getting it off the ground. One did. Fred Northrup was able to get the West Wall worked on and all the internal changes that went along with that particular campaign. But it's difficult to do. And as I said, the community really mobilized itself to get the job done. I think the other defining moment, which, as I said earlier too, pulled me into being more interested in governance, was the whole problem that we encountered when Robert Taylor was the dean, and the process we went through after that. In many ways, I look back at that and see that as sort of a refining fire that we went through, and that we had to relook at ourselves. And certainly prior to calling Steve Thomason as dean, we did a parish profile. But even before that, we were working with the diocese in terms of who are we, where are we going, and how do we intend to get there. And Melissa Skelton, who was a priest in the diocese at the time and is now, actually she's now an archbishop in the Canadian church, was working with us very successfully, I think, to help us determine what paths we were going to take. So I think that was a real defining moment for us and for me in terms of seeing this parish able to lay itself out and say, you know we have problems, we know we have foibles, we know we have egos that are out there, and how do we move forward with all of this? And I think we've done that. And I think we are a better, a stronger place for that.
That's something I was really hoping to get, because your experience and perspective of St. Mark's goes back literally decades before mine and for a lot of people here,
sure.
I think. And to hear the story of the growing pains. Like you said, any organization, any unit has these similar pains, and we're not immune to that. We're not protected from it. But if we have the kind of people here and the kind of cohesion here that can bear us through those growing pains to a point where we are healthy, we're thriving, we're relevant. And you, like you said, even for all the ups and downs in the future, we will continue to be healthy and thriving and relevant in this city, in this part of the world, and in this world, then we're doing something right. And that's one of the things I'm hoping can come through these conversations, is to find out what exactly we're doing right. And maybe 50 years from now, somebody will play this on whatever device they have 50 years from now, and they'll hear the story about how these, how the so many pieces of this organization came together.
One of the things I think I have rarely heard at St. Mark's is that's somebody else's problem. And that is folks not taking responsibility for their community. And instead, what I've often heard is, I see this as a problem. Others have seen it as a problem. How do we get together and solve the problem? And I think it's that sort of proactive approach, to use that buzzword, that has made all the difference. It isn't people just sitting back and, well, that's how we've always done it, and it worked before, so it'll probably work again. I just don't hear that. I don't hear that at all. And so that's another factor, I suppose, that makes me very hopeful about the future, because I think that kind of approach and attitude engenders that approach and attitude in others, and will continue to move us forward successfully.
Walter Stoffelfeld, thank you so much for all the perspectives, all the answers you've shared. This has been a wonderful time with you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. Our music was performed by Michael Kleinschmidt on the Flintrop organ at St. Mark's. Michael Pereira and Andrew Himes produced the podcast, and we hope you'll visit stmarks.org. So long.